This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Inspiring Voices, a division of Guidepost. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, Really God, Bangladesh? A Nurse's Spiritual Journey. And joining me from the Detroit, Michigan area in the United States is Vicki Augustiniak, who is a registered nurse. Thank you, and thank you for joining me today.
Hello, Jay. Nice to talk to you this afternoon.
A pleasure visiting with you. One of the basic questions, and I have a general knowledge of Bangladesh, but not an in-depth knowledge. Many of my listeners will wonder or perhaps be confused about where in the world Bangladesh is. And if you want to share that, let's start there. Where is Bangladesh, and what is the population?
Bangladesh is not far from India, and it was a population of Bangladesh used to be part of India at one time, then part of Pakistan, and then during the 70s, a war broke out, and it split to its own independent country. If you remember, in the 70s, George Harrison did a concert for Bangladesh.
Right.
And that was it's one of the poorest areas in the world. Population is very large, very crowded, very congested.
It's very similar to India. In fact, they're basically cousins in some ways, I guess, from cultural perspective. How did you get involved with Bangladesh, and what in the world is your book detailing?
I always, I'm a nurse, and I've been a nurse for a long time. Always wanted to do a medical mission or go overseas. I was very practical as a nurse. I said, what are you going to do if you go to another country? Blood pressures, the local people can do that. So I looked for a physician to go with, and I was very blessed to hook up with a Korean doctor who was going to Bangladesh, and when he asked me to go, I didn't even know where Bangladesh was at the time.
And the journey that you took, you went as a to do some mission work in a medical perspective. What did you find when you arrived on the shores of Bangladesh?
I was very overwhelmed to get to Bangladesh. It's a long journey. We go from Tokyo, the first trip through Thailand, and then we arrived in Dhaka, Bangladesh. Very congested, very chaotic. The traffic was unbelievable. People all over the place. At that time, squatters living in the city. And I was extremely overwhelmed by seeing, cars and goats and, you know, cattle and just people all over the place.
Did you also find a hospital of good reputation in the area?
Not at that time. We went from Dhaka. We got on a plane and a van, and then went to the really remote areas of Bangladesh. We travel about 8 hours from the capital up into the northern parts, northeast part of the country.
And the type of medical care you were able to give, how extensive was it? How in-depth was it? Basic care, or how would you describe it?
The doctor I go with is an OBGYN doctor. And the first trip, we went with two doctors. One was a hand surgeon, and the other one was the OBGYN. In the area we go, there is a lot of prolapsed uteruses of the women there. And so the OBGYN doctor repairs those, and the hand surgeon did a lot of burns and helped people with their hand injuries.
How were they able to do the medical care in a country that does not have typical medical facilities?
We bring our medicines and our surgical supplies. We carry them. We've had anesthesiologists go with us who do IV sedation so that they don't feel what the doctor is doing. I have made 6 trips to Bangladesh. As the trips have progressed, we're able to do a little bit more and take a little bit more and have more doctors, sometimes residents and stuff that will go with us.
You have titled the book, Really God, Bangladesh. So there was a question in your mind. How did you begin the initial curiosity about doing something in this arena?
I've always had that desire from the time I was a little girl. I felt that I would do something overseas. Actually, I thought that I would go to Africa, and just never presented itself. So when the doctor said he was willing to take me, I was willing to go.
This was in 2003 that you made the journey, correct?
Correct. The first journey.
The first journey is 2003. Your book, would you describe it as a diary of your trip, or how would you describe it? What was the impetus for putting it into print?
I would describe it as a diary. When I started the journey, you know how when you go over, do something, and you try to tell somebody about your experience, sometimes they don't really get what you've done, or you forget things. So my thought was that my husband did not make that trip with me and that I needed him to understand what I would go through and my feelings. And so I started writing a diary as we went. During that process, I continued writing the diary. And later on, my husband actually went to Bangladesh 3 times with me.
Amazing. Vicki, how long did it take to get this into a form that you felt comfortable with sharing to the world, or sharing with the world?
About 2 years.
2 years. And of the stories that you recount in your book, what do you feel is the most startling, eye-opening, or inspirational that you have shared?
There's 2 stories that I feel are the most startling and most inspirational. Number one, I did make 2 trips to the Philippines. And we did medical care. We did 80 surgeries in 5 days.
Amazing.
And worked very intensely. There was a young boy about 3 years old that had, I'm using medical terms, he had a colostomy that was going to be revised, and ended up, as we were doing that surgery, the surgeon did one little final look at his bowel and found a worm.
Oh.
And then took the worm out, a live worm, and actually repaired that. And that little boy died shortly that evening. That was very, very hard for all of us that worked on that surgery. I was in the operating room I was in the operating room when that boy was having surgery. And so that was very impactful for me. The second story is on our 3rd trip to Bangladesh, my husband's first trip going with me. On the way out of the country, we were about 2 hours outside of the country, and we were hit head-on by a truck. And I was in the van that occurred. One of the nurses, a 72-year-old retired nurse, slid off the seat and fell into the other seat and had a displaced hip, and ended up, we got to see firsthand the care of medical care in Bangladesh. We were treated extremely well, but it took us another 6 to 7 hours to get us to a major hospital in Dhaka to have treatment. That was a very overwhelming story, too.
What do you think the reader is going to take away from this? Is there a moral or an underlying theme that you wanted to share?
The thing that I, or the moral that I wanted to share was that anybody can, make little changes, can get out of their comfort zone, because this is not what I thought, I would be doing, and make changes. Sometimes my friends have said to me, well, I can never do that. Well, then I tell them, well, find people that can do that and support them and help. You know, I have my friends giving me eyeglasses when I've gone to South Africa or giving me medicines. Those little things do make a difference to the people in third world countries. They look forward to people that do are able to come. They look forward to us being there. They're very happy when we're there.
You have mentioned to me also that the proceeds from this book, actually the profits, are being reinvested. Share with my listeners a little of that story.
When I was writing the book, and because of being in Bangladesh many times, I do not intend to take any profit from the book. And any time people give me money, I reroute it back into the mission and the school and the agricultural school. And hopefully, our intention was to build a hospital in Bangladesh. And they have, the local people have built the hospital. Now it's to maintain the hospital.
Beautiful. The title of the book, again, is Really God, Bangladesh, A Nurse's Spiritual Journey. So in addition to the practical side of what you are sharing in here, it also impacted you on a spiritual level, correct?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Wonderful.
On my first trip to Bangladesh, when we were on the roads driving for miles and miles and miles, I started looking out the windows, and I started seeing the people. And other than the cars, you know, a lot of it, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is like the time of Christ, you know, with people, the way they're dressed and, you know, no modern machinery and rice fields and the agriculture. And I really was profoundly spiritually touched at that trip.
This is a wonderful book, inspirational in its content. 224 pages of descriptives of your journey, not only as a spiritual journey, but also your practical side of working in the trenches in the medical profession in Bangladesh. The title again is Really God, Bangladesh, A Nurse's Spiritual Journey. My guest has been Vicky Augustiniak. Thank you for joining me today. Is there some place that we can get a copy of this book and find out bit more about what you're up to?
You can get a copy through Inspiring Voices, guidepost copy, and also on Barnes & Noble and Facebook, I think, too. I have a Facebook website, so if you go to the title, there is copies on Facebook.
Excellent. They can do a search under your name, and I will spell your last name because it is a little challenging. Actually, the first name, too, is Vicky with an I, no E, and last name Augustiniak. A-U-G-U-S-T, like August, I-N-I-A-K. Thank you for joining me today, Vicky.
You're very welcome, and you have a very blessed and a good day.
Thank you so much. Best of luck with this book, and hopefully we'll get lots and lots of listeners who will buy the book and help support the mission in Bangladesh. Thank you again for joining me.
Thank you so much, and have, again, a very good day.
Fine. For Indie Book Publishing, Inspiring Voices, Division of Guidepost, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, Friesland, A New Beginning. And the author is Huda Ayaz, and Huda joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. Welcome, Huda.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about my book.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Huda. You're 12 years old right now, but you were 9 when you wrote this book, Friesland, A New Beginning. It's part of a 4-book series, and we're going to talk more about Samantha Ringel, the main character, and all of her challenges in trying to save Friesland. How would you sum up this storyline of your book?
My book is a fiction fantasy novel for children about a girl named Samantha who goes to a secret planet called Friesland to save the Friesians, the citizens of Friesland, who live there from an evil man who is trying to make the planet dark and evil. 6 earlier champions have failed, and now it is Samantha's turn to save the Friesians from utter doom.
Well, that's a great summation. Thank you. Now, when this idea came to you, how did this all happen? How did you suddenly become a writer at the, you know, old age of 9 years?
Well, this book came from a dream I had about a land of snow where it was bright and happy. But then there was a dark shadow that came over the land and made it dark and made all the fairies there sad. I told my family about this dream the next day and thought of my love for writing and reading, and I decided to write the book about it. At first, I was hesitant because not many people my age have written a book. But after all the encouragement I got from my friends and family, I finally gathered up the courage to write the book.
Where did you first come up with this main character, Samantha? Who is she?
Samantha is the main character of the story. She loves snow and she loves winter. She loves everything about winter. She's extraordinary. She's an extraordinary fourth grader.
And she makes a new friend. Now, tell us about her friend, extraordinary friend.
She meets a snowflake fairy named Rebecca, who's from Friesland. And Rebecca comes to Samantha to tell her about how Friesland is in trouble, and she goes there to save it from the evil Nishagar, who's trying to make Friesland dark and evil. And if they don't save Friesland, then Nishagar is going to make Friesland dark and evil forever. And after Friesland, they're going to make, then Nishagar is going to take over Earth. So she wants to help all of them.
So this evil antagonist, his name is Ronnie. How did he come up with such a wild name and become so evil?
Oh, because his whole entire family is supposed to be like an evil family. His family's goal to make Friesland and Earth all dark and evil. So I came up with the name Nishagar because in the book it says it means evil soul, but it actually, I actually just took random words and added random letters and took away letters and made the word Nishagar.
So you just created a new word, new name.
Yeah.
And of course, he's got lots of servants, whole army of them. And what's their name?
They're called Ninstings.
I guess another word you created.
Yeah.
Ninstings, and they're all dark and evil and malicious. And they've got the same blood and mind as him.
Yes. Nishagar created them from his own blood and his wand into acting as cruel and evil as he was.
So basically, they're just a miserable bunch, and they want everybody else to be miserable.
Yeah.
This once bright and happy place called Friesland, a land of snow, how does Nishagar get control and turn Friesland into such a dark and dreary place?
At first, Friesland was protected by Santa Claus, but then he died in a tragic accident after he went into a chimney that had fire lit in it. So after that, Nishagar found the opportunity to go to Friesland and make it all evil and dark.
Yes, it's not good to go down a chimney when there's a fire in it. That's not a good thing to do. Poor Santa, but she is going to come and rescue Friesland. And, of course, again, this is first book, A New Beginning. Obviously, the beginning of this story that takes 4 books to really explain. And you've gotten, what, 2 more books already written?
Yeah, I completed my second book in fifth grade, and I completed my third book in sixth grade, and now I'm going to seventh grade, and my fourth book is almost complete.
Well, congratulations. That's an amazing accomplishment for anyone, and especially at your young age now.
Thank you.
There are others who have tried to rescue Friesland. What happened?
There were six other champions who failed. Their names were Matilda, Max, Alexa, Brian, Liliana, and Anthony. Well, in the book, they don't tell what happens, but I might make a prequel to tell about what happened to the what happened to the earlier champions.
Kind of the same track as Star Wars. We have to go back and find out what happened to bring us to this point in the stories. George Lucas, you're right out of the same mold. This incredible journey by Samantha, is she doing this on her own, or does she have some close friends that are helping her?
Actually, she goes to Friesland with Rebecca. In the first book, she's alone, but in the future book, she goes with the other champions.
So in the first book, they conquer the evil Ninstrager.
I don't want to ruin the story.
Okay, very good. So we'll leave that to the reader to find out.
Yes.
Now, you're an amazing family. You have two other sisters who are authors as well, published authors.
Yeah, my older sister, Sadaf Ayaz, has published Coughing Red Lights in ninth grade. And my younger sister, Maliha Ayaz, has written The Heart of Time.
Were they an inspiration to you?
I was the first one to start writing, but my older sister always wrote short stories, and she would read them to the family. And that inspired me and my younger sister to start writing short stories, too.
So the moral of the story, or the message that you'd like to leave with readers?
The moral of my story is that when you think positively, you make the environment happy and bright. But when you think negatively, you make the environment sad and dark. I'm also hoping that by seeing what I have done, other children would like to do some great things too.
Where do we get your book? What's the best way?
My book is on Barnes & Noble's and Amazon. If you just type up my name, Huda Ayaz, or the book, Friesland New Beginning, then you'll find all the information online.
And we will spell that for everyone. Huda, H-U-D-A, and Ayaz, A-Y-A-Z. You're also on YouTube.
Yes. I've done two videos myself, and I have one video for my book.
When will your second book come out?
My second book is going to come out next week, and my third book is going to come out next month.
And give us those titles.
My second book's name is Friesland, Good or Evil. And my third book is Friesland, Mervilletale Confusion.
Well, again, Huda, you're an amazing young lady, and we salute you for all your accomplishments.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for joining us here on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you for inviting me here.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing. More joy and less judgment. You're not alone. Come to the living room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing. Helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, The First Lady, and the author is Silvia Ferrante. And Rosangela Beitanati joins us now. She translated the book into English from Portuguese. We welcome you, Rosangela.
Thank
you.
Hi.
Thank you for being with us. Now, this is quite a love story, as the The best way to introduce it is we go back in time, as you write, when families and societies were strict and conservative and people had to hide their feelings, they could not be themselves. Let's go back to the time when this story started. Maria was born back in 1907. She was very poor.
Yes. Maria was one of the four girls that the couple had, and she lived with her mom and her parents and the three sisters until she was 11 years old. And a priest, seeing that the family was so poor and needed help, and they saw the beautiful children that this couple had, offered to take Maria to São Paulo to work for a family, a rich family. Actually, it was his family and his sister. And he said, okay, I'll bring her there, and she is going to have a better life. You know, when families are very poor, they believe that giving out children to follow their dreams is going to be better for them than to stay in poverty. And she went there to work with the family for 3 years. And as she was growing, she was becoming more beautiful. The workers in the house became jealous about her. And they decided, one of the employees in the house, the housekeeper, started talking about her in the house with the owner, and the lady became jealous. So she said, you know what, I better get rid of this girl because she's trouble. She's too beautiful to keep her in my house. This is how she became a cabaret dancer. After a story that goes on, she becomes a cabaret dancer.
So she goes from poverty to a nanny to eventually she realizes that she has opportunity by becoming a cabaret dancer.
Well, she didn't have a job. She looked for a job. She was illiterate. She looked for a job she could not find. And she said, well, friend says, okay, here's the opportunity. You can get this job and you can go for. Well, she thinks a little bit and she says, you know what? I have no choice. I don't want to go back to that poor life with my parents and my sisters, and I'd better get the job. And she accepted the challenge, and she started working as a cabaret dancer. There is where she meets Nino, and he was a rich man. He lived in a conservative society in a little town from São Paulo, Brazil, and he brings her to town to live with him. And it was quite a scandal in that back in 1930s, something like that. I can't remember very well now. But the family became very upset with him, saying, how can you bring a cabaret dancer, a woman that does what she does in our family? But he fell in love and he didn't think twice about keeping her. And then the story goes on and on and on during her life. He kept her forever, you know, until he died. This couple passed away in 1975 and I think 1977. And people in town, they were very curious about this story. And Silvia Ferrante, the writer, she was walking in the cemetery one afternoon where she saw she was photographing the cemetery because they have mausoleums, beautiful graves over there and statues, marble statues. And she saw two holding hands. And she came close and she saw that it was the couple that people talk about forever in town. And she left the cemetery with feeling like writing the story. And she started a research about the couple. And in 2011, she wrote the book. In 3 months after being in the cemetery, 3 months later, the book was ready to be printed.
So it's based on real facts. There's some fictional treatment to bring the story to life.
Yes.
There's that kind of love story you can't put down.
Yes. I'm going to tell you how I started. I was very curious about this story. Actually, this is how it happens. I was in Brazil on vacation. On my way out the door, my daughter said, "Mom, you have to read this book. It's about Nino and Rosinha, and you are going to love it." And I got the book, and I started reading on my way back to America. I fell in love. I said, "Oh, my gosh, it's so beautiful. This story is like you cannot put it down, the book. You start reading, and you say, oh, my gosh, this is you leave your what you have to do. You leave on the side to read the book and finish the story because it's amazing what they go through together to because they loved each other.
The forbidden relationship at the time.
Yes, yes, definitely. It was a forbidden relationship. She could not walk in town. She could not buy anything in town because the stores refused to sell to her. If he was with her or if he was in town buying stuff, fine, they would treat him well. But if she entered alone, they would ignore her. Even though she had a lot of money from him, they ignored her.
So his family was totally embarrassed by this relationship.
Yes, and they are still until now. They can't believe that someone wrote a book. I mean, Silvia Ferrante wrote a book about the story. They were very embarrassed. It's you know, some things you cannot fix. You know, when someone falls in love, you cannot fix that. You have to accept. There is no way you can change anything around. And there were, and there is still until now, too much talk about. The family is like they cannot believe that people are still being curious about this. They want to forget. They want to bury her. And there is no way because when so much happened in their lives and there is no way you can just bury everything with the couple.
The readers, they'll feel the pain of this, but they'll also feel the great love between the two.
Yes, yes. The lesson that I would take from the book is that we have to be very responsible of what we do with our lives. When I decide to translate the book or when Silvia decided to write the book, it's not that we are praising a cabaret dancer. We are not praising that. My intention was to show that you have to be responsible with yourself. Whatever you do for yourself today is going to affect your life forever. And when you see a young lady doing what she did to survive, it hurt her forever. And that's the most precious lesson that you take from the book. It's amazing that she found someone that accepted her and took her out of that life. It's amazing, but nobody ever forgot.
We've been talking to Rose Angela Bettinetti. She is the translator of the book, The First Lady, written in Portuguese by the author Silvia Ferrante. What's the best way to get the book?
The book is on sale on Archway and Amazon.
Well, thank you so much, Rose Angela. Very fascinating story, very obviously deep in meaning of the love between these two, and also just wasn't acceptable at that time. I guess that proves the saying, love conquers all.
Almost all.
Almost all.
Yes.
Yes, almost all.
Yes, almost all, not all. You have to read the book to understand what happened at the end. And then you see that it's not love conquers, but not all.
Rose Angela, thank you so much for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.